was a friend for many, many years, I didn't realise that he was actually a bit of a crook. We had a great, great future, and he threw it away because of greed. And they made a comment, "I prefer to be comfortable because once upon a time, we had nothing, and we nearly had to sell everything that we owned to survive." I says, "Well done." I says, "But don't you think it's being uncomfortable that got you through that?"
On today's episode of The Engaging Marketeer, I am joined by Dan Mather of JKE Security. Dan has a up and down history in business where he invested into
a business of which he was working some years ago, and that all went horribly wrong
when the owner of the business turned out to be taking funds out without anybody's knowledge. Dan then set up his own business separate, which he has turned into a huge success. It is now a six-figure business, and it is on the verge of becoming a seven-figure business. I'm going to be talking to Dan about what it was like to get so much into debt as the result of somebody else doing the dirty on you, and how he turned that around and created a hugely successful business in his own right. What's with the elephant?
Ah, you want to talk about the elephant in the room? I'm a trustee for a charity.
And yes.
There's a great story about this elephant, because it's given to, it was originally given to children.
Right.
Who didn't have long left. And inside the ear, there's a voice recorder and a pouch to leave notes so the children can leave everlasting messages to the parents, which is used to make me cry every time I spoke about it.
Wow.
And there's a, yeah, so. Silence that. So yeah, we sponsor Hope the Elephant, and every month a child gets it. But they now do it for adults, so the adults can leave the messages to the children. You know, so end of life people who are dying,
yeah.
And they've now really upped the ante. So every baby born in neonatal in Derby and Burton hospitals get given a Hope. They've got a Hope waiting for them in the cot. And there's recordings of the baby's heartbeat. So if they don't make it, the parents have always got the heartbeat to listen to while cuddling Hope. So it's pretty emotional.
Yeah, well, that's a level I didn't think we'd kick off on, to be honest with you. I don't really know what to say to that.
Yeah.
Where did the idea come from? Because is that something that's being done nationwide, or is that just locally where you are?
It's just locally at the moment. Yeah, so the charity is all about giving memories for families that don't have long left together.
Mm.
And it sort of evolved into giving Hope out. So businesses can sponsor Hope now. Sorry, let me just get rid of this phone. It's buzzing in my ear. Businesses can now sponsor Hope every month. Individuals can go onto the website, sponsor Hope, and you know every month a family get it, and obviously the impact that it has on the families is massive, massive.
Yeah.
We get stories of one mum lies on the son's bed at 3:30 every day when he's supposed to be coming home from school, just cuddling Hope, listening to him snoring, because that's what they've left in Hope's ear, is the child who's no longer with us snoring, because that was a quirky thing for him at the time.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's
wow. I'm the trustee for a charity as well, World Mencap, but I also do a lot of work for Hospice of the Good Shepherd, which is, yeah, end of life as well, in most cases, not all cases. I've never come across anything like that. It seems like a brilliant idea.
It is, and this is the direction of the charity, is because it means so much to the holders of Hope. You know, there's people out there that can't, one of the one of the biggest worries of a parent who's going to lose a child is the fear of not remembering the sound of their voice. And that's why this means so much, because now they've got the everlasting, the eternal message from the child. Just a simple, I love you, or whatever it may be. And vice versa, the parents can leave it for the children.
Yeah.
So we're really looking at pushing this out to local businesses. You know, local businesses can sponsor, because they can do it in mass. You know, businesses can change the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that in turn then can raise a lot of money for the charities as well.
Absolutely.
Wow, okay. That is definitely not how I thought we'd be kicking off. but thank you for that. I'll tell you what, is there anywhere we can go to get information on that? Because I'd like to put links underneath the podcast for that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on the website, meanddee.co.uk, and there'll be a link there somewhere to sponsor Hope.
Okay. I'll put those links below the podcast description so that people can just follow that and go straight to there, because that is pretty powerful. What made you want to get involved in a charity like that?
Obviously, being in business, it's our obligation to give back in whatever way we can. And so I came across Maria, the founder, at one of our networking groups, and it was just really emotive, the speech that she gave. And, you know, there wasn't many dry eyes in the room. And when someone has that much of an impact on you, that's when you know it's the right one to go ahead with. So I started just doing small things. So running the Derby 10K on behalf of the charity, getting involved where I could, supporting, helping. We set up our own networking group, and the Me and D charity became our nominated charity of the year. I don't know the full reasons really, but something I was doing, promoting on social media, doing the 10K, trying to raise funds, etc. Last year they invited me to be a trustee, so I thought absolutely.
Yeah, it's a lot of responsibility, that, isn't it?
It is. But we've got a great group of people, always all driving in the right direction. Charity's 18 this year, so we want it to be a big year, because the charity's 18, the founder's 70 years old. So, yeah, it's a big year for us.
Mm. Well, good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck. So let's lighten the mood a little bit. Let's lighten the mood a little bit. And let's talk about where you started in business. So we're not lightening the mood that much, are we? going back to your business of, was it 2015?
So 2015 is when I got my first taste of becoming a business owner, which didn't last long. So I'd been an intrapreneur for many, many years, helping build the business that I was working in. And I got recognized for it, and I got invited to become an owner of the business. So, you know, went through the process, remortgaging the house, loans, etc., bought a share of the business. But unfortunately, the managing director and now business partner, even though he was a friend for many, many years, I didn't realize that he was actually a bit of a crook.
Mm.
So literally within 12 months, we had massive, massive problems. And we went from, so we built it up. The reason I, you know, rose with the company was because we built it from literally turning over about 100K a year to the best part of £1 million business. And we did it within the space of about 18 months. And it was myself going out there, getting the connections, forming the relationships. You know, all the schools in Camden, for example, or a lot of the schools in Camden, we took over. We looked after all the fire and security systems. And it was a massive, massive project for us. Yet, all of a sudden, we've never been in such a good position, but we had serious cash flow problems. And it's because he was taking money out of the business all the time. We had no exposure to the financials of the business, what was going on.
So you invested into it then without knowing about the financials?
Yeah, it's a bit stupid, really. But we are where we are now. It actually worked out. At the time, we didn't realize it, but in 2017, I thought, we can't go on like this. I remember Christmas Day 2016, stood in my kitchen, and I was in tears. Not because I'd not been able to provide a Christmas, but because I had, and I didn't know if it was my last one.
Mm.
Things were so bad. There was high court enforcement knocking on the doors, and they were all after him. But obviously, being in the business, it had a massive knock-on effect. We had four girls working in the office for us. They were on the coal face. They were the ones that had to let these people in. So I thought, enough's enough. It's time to do something about it. So in the February 2017, I set up JK Security. I was still working for the other business at the time because I needed the income. And in the July time, I resigned as a director, threw the towel in and just went fully into JKE. And within the first couple of years, we'd turned it into a multiple six-figure business.
Mm.
So thankfully, a lot of people, because it, you know yourself, business is all about relationships.
Mm.
People don't necessarily buy off people. People work. That's what we found. A lot of the customers actually came with me. So, you know, we couldn't do anything about the, you know, like the schools, etc. They were tied in, but they wouldn't go with the new business. But other people did. I had shopping centres. I had a large hospital trust in Wolverhampton that I designed a way of migrating their system from an old legacy obsolete system to a new one at a very small cost. And thankfully, they stuck with me as the person that designed that system. And it got me in there from day one. And, you know, we've just been building the relationships ever since.
Hmm. So when you were stood in your kitchen and you had people chasing the business for money, it was still operating at that point as well?
Yeah, still operating. Still operating. Now, he'd done a very good... So when I joined, or when I bought in, one of my prerequisites for joining was it had to become a limited company because he'd been operating as a sole trader.
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah, that was good in the end. It turned out well because they were chasing him as a sole trader for everything before. It got to the point where they were chasing the limited company as well, but by that point, I'd lost the heart, I'd lost the drive, and I had an eye on doing my own thing. So I wasn't, even though it was hard, and nobody should have to go, you just have to take responsibility for your own life, your own decisions. And
so if it was a limited company then, presumably he was a director and you were a director?
Yes.
What was the split?
It was 60-40.
And the money he was taking out of the business then, was that officially being taken out as a dividend, or was he just removing it and spending it?
It was removing it and spending it. I was asking for an accountant for many, many months. We'd never had an accountant. We had a bookkeeper, and he was feeding the bookkeeper information. So you can guess what was going on there. So yeah. I thought, right, I'm out. Within the first, you know, accounting period, I just got out and said, I can't do this. I can't have this. You know, you can choose a responsibility that you want to take on, and that's not a responsibility I wanted.
Is it something you regret doing?
No. Because it it was a valuable lesson. I mean, you know, yourself, we spend thousands and thousands of pounds on mentoring and coaching and, you know, to learn this kind of stuff. But that was just my buy-in. That was my investment. Because what year was it? I think it was 2020. Might have been 21. I can't remember now. But I became debt-free. So at the peak of it, I was about £100,000 in debt when I left. Now, that included the buy-in. It included things like the car I was driving, because I bought the car that was being subsidized by the business. And all of a sudden, I'm left with a car in negative equity that I had to run, and I had to pay the, you know, pay it off. So I'd class that as a debt. There was credit cards where I bought a lot of kit. It was about £20,000 worth on credit cards.
And was that kit that was owned by the company then?
Yeah. But I did a good job of clearing out the stores as well. So I still got quite a bit of the stuff, which actually helped me, because my first few jobs, I was able to sell stuff that I didn't have to buy. So I'd already got it out of the stores for the previous company, because he went off and he bought a house in France, you see. That's what he was subsidizing a life in France.
Right.
So he bought this nice house with a big swimming pool. Well, no, sorry. It had a swimming pool. He then went and bought a new swimming pool. And it was a proper top of the garden. He had a bar outside his back door. It was a beautiful, beautiful house. And he ended up losing that. So he ended up losing everything because he couldn't sustain it. You know, there's subcontractors he was using that he wasn't paying. And word quickly gets around. So, yeah, he got his comeuppance.
So do you still have contact with him now?
No. So when he knew what I was doing, he didn't like it because he knew that I was taking customers off him. But he got into a position where he was so desperate, he was wanting to subcontract me to do some of his work. But I realized that he was still trying to get one over on me, because he wanted me to buy all the kit. He couldn't afford the kit. And he assured me that the customers would pay me directly. And I was like, he's having a laugh, because I've got, out of the list he gave me, which was about five jobs, I've got purchase orders for two of them from the customers directly, because they were getting no response off him, so they came to me. And he's still trying to sell me that job for me to buy the kit for him. I'm like, yeah, forget it.
Yeah.
So after that, I just washed my hands off him totally.
Is it? Was that the last you heard from him?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what would you say to him if you saw him again?
I've thought about this many, many times. I'd go up. I would shake his hand, because without him, I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't have this business. You know, I wouldn't be having these, I wouldn't have these opportunities to help families, you know, that need it the most. Yeah, you know, I'd still be, if I was still working for him, I'd still be, you know, living in his shadow. Because he was a very authoritarian kind of person, you know, squashed any belief that I could do it myself, that I needed him. So you only learn by doing it, don't you? So I'd shake his hand and I'd tell him exactly what business I'm doing at the moment, and rub it in his face. I hope so. I'm very, very active on social media.
Yeah, very active.
And, you know, rightly or wrongly, part of that is a in-your-face message. Say, look what I'm doing. So, and this is what you could have had. Because we had a great business. We did have a great business. We had great customers, we had facilities management companies, FM companies, you know, we had the hospital. We had a great, great future, and he threw it away because of greed.
Mm.
Short-term gratification.
And do you know where he is now, what he's actually doing?
I know he's still in France. I know he had to downsize. I know he's not got a swimming pool or a bar. So, yeah, apart from that, I know he's trying to do security in France, which he was trying to set up anyway, you know, back when we had the other business. So he wanted the French branch. Mm. So I know he's still trying to do that. I know he's got a Facebook page, which I see every so often, and it's just bad installations. It's shoddy workmanship. I don't even know why he's putting it on social media.
Mm.
But if that's what he's doing, you know, that's what he's doing.
And you're just winning by your success.
That's it. But it's a massive driver. I mean, you have to take motivation from where you can get it, because who motivates the motivator? Mm. So, and then you have your ups and downs in business. You have your bad times, you have your good times. But I have to admit that is a massive motivator for the bad times.
Mm.
It's just making sure that you go out there, you take massive action, and you just keep winning.
And speaking of winning, what made you so confident that you could set up a business again in the same industry and make it hugely successful?
I had no confidence. I had zero confidence. It started. So you hear the stories about business owners or entrepreneurs. They go out and they set up the business, and then it fails within the first 12 months. And you know, you've got that stupid statistic, right? Where I don't think it's actually the businesses that fail. I just think it's the people that go in with the expectation that they can be a millionaire overnight.
Mm.
Not have to do a lot of work for it. Work will come to you. And then the reality hits. That's kind of what I had at the time. Because I was talking to another engineer, another company. He works for himself. All he does is domestic work. He's got a database of 2,000 customers. He charges them 65 quid a month for 65 quid a year for maintenance. That's it. And he just lives on that. He's nearly retirement age anyway, but he just lives on that. Any installation that he gets is a bonus. It's just a couple of hundred quid in his back pocket. That's how he lives. And at the time, I was doing an installation for a friend, and that was how I set up JKE. That was the initial investment. And I subcontracted him to help me. And he was telling me the story, and I thought, do you know what? That sounds so refreshing. The fact that you just wake up in the morning, go and do an installation on someone's house, a couple of quid in the back pocket, no stress, no hassle, build your database up, have the recurring revenue. Amazing. So that's what I decided that JKE was going to do. However, leaflet drop-in, advertising in the local magazine, social media, I was getting very, very few leads. And I thought, oh, crap, how do I do this? I didn't, you know, my expectation, my idea of grandeur all of a sudden was, oh, shit, I can't, you know, where am I going to find these customers from? So I decided, sorry, I didn't decide. So, but then I started getting the opportunities from the previous clients in the commercial mm-hmm. world. So I just went.
They were coming back to you then because they knew the quality that you were doing for them in the first place.
Yeah, they knew it wasn't my fault the way things were. They knew who was responsible for it. So they had the confidence in me because I knew them, I knew their systems. And I was always service oriented, and we had long-term clients. Like, I started there in 2002. And these were the clients that I took with me from 2002. So that's a testament to the service that I can provide, and the confidence that I instilled and the relationships that I built. So yeah, going back to the original question, you know, how confident or what made you confident? I was not confident. I literally just took any opportunity that I could. But then I employed a business coach who I've still got. Obviously, we're on the same mentorship. You're one of our mentors now. So I did a lot of reading books, listening to podcasts, because I knew that you needed to grow your mindset. You need to grow your confidence, to grow your mindset, to take the action. So that's what I did, and that's what I'm still doing. Because I'm still not confident.
That's interesting you say that.
Yeah, I'm still not confident. But you just make sure that you're focused on strategies, focused on your goals, on where you want to go, and the support that you've got around you. So the mentorship, the business coaches, the network of people. Obviously, we're in the same network of some fantastic entrepreneurs. And on our quarterly meetups, I just absorb everything in that room and then go out, and it recharges me for another 3 months.
If you think that you're still not confident, or you say you're still not confident, do you see yourself right now as a successful entrepreneur?
Yes. Because 7 years in business is successful. And it's not going anytime soon. I've got a great pipeline. I've got great customers. I've got some great opportunities. I've got some great people. Yeah, I employ half my family. So
that's nice.
It's nice. That's another thing that keeps you going, because you're kind of responsible for other people's incomes then, and directly related to you. So yeah, I do. It's hard to say I'm successful. Very hard to say, because successful people see as wealthy, you drive nice cars, etc. But no, strip success right down. It's, can you wake up every morning, go out there and earn a living, provide a service, wake up the next day, do it again, and keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it.
Success means different things to different people.
It does.
To some, it's, can you spend time with your kids when you want to?
Absolutely.
Or can you take time off when you need to without your business collapsing?
Correct.
Whereas to others, it's, can I have 6 Ferraris in the garage? Different things to different people.
But yeah, working on that one.
It's interesting. You said you see yourself successful entrepreneur. You're in huge success of your business, yet you still say you don't feel confident.
I think, it's that whole living in the comfort zone, isn't it? If you live in the comfort zone, you're not growing. Where if you are always living in I did have this conversation the other day with someone about being uncomfortable. And it's someone who does live massively in their comfort zone. And they made a comment, I prefer to be comfortable, because once upon a time, we had nothing and we nearly had to sell everything that we owned to survive. I says, well done. I says, but don't you think it's being uncomfortable that got you through that?
Absolutely. I was just going to say that. Yeah. You can't get through something like that without being uncomfortable. You stay in your comfort zone, then you'll go under in that situation. So for you, because this is different for everybody as well, what is your comfort zone for you? What is it that you like to do to be easy on a day-to-day basis?
I don't think I have a comfort zone. Because if I'm not, it's something I am trying to work on, I'll be honest. At the moment, we're trying to hand over a lot of my sort of admin tasks, etc., to team members. But I find it very hard to let go. You know, even the likes of sending an invoice. Should I be invoicing? No. Got an admin department for that. You know, should I be raising supplier purchase orders? Before I came on this, I just did some RAMs for an installation that we're starting tomorrow. You know, risk assessment, method statements. Should I be doing that? Well, not really. What should I be doing? The higher income generating activities.
Absolutely.
Going out there, building relationships, networking. And so we're trying to get rid of those tasks right now. But the problem is, if I do get rid of them, and then I'm sat here going, okay, what do I do now? I feel like I'm not driving the company forward, which is a totally wrong mindset, and that's the bit that I'm working on right now.
Okay.
So when I've accomplished that, you know, maybe I'll have a little bit more comfort.
Let's flip the question around a little bit. What is it that you do that you feel this is really stretching you?
So, good question. Everything I do. Everything I do is stretching me. You know, I'm looking at, currently I'm looking at a new contract. And it could be a game-changing contract for us. It could really elevate us, not to the next level, but the next level up.
Wow.
And it's really, really exciting. And it's really flipping scary as well. There's things that I have no idea on how to do it. But, you know, what's that saying? Everything's impossible until someone's done it.
Until someone's done it. Yeah.
So there's always, is it the Grant Cardone? I think it was Grant Cardone. He was the first person I started listening to when I started this self-development journey. And I'm sure it was him, said creativity follows commitment. You know, start now, then figure it out later.
Hmm.
And that's what I do. So I'm always uncomfortable to a point, but it doesn't stop me doing it, because if I start something, I know that I'll figure it out.
Hmm.
It's not let me down yet. Sometimes I'm thinking, no idea. But I always find a way.
Hmm. So you started talking about 10 minutes ago about work or advertising that you were doing. So you mentioned social media, you mentioned flyers and leafleting. I think you mentioned magazines as well. But then it was the previous clients that worked with you that started coming to you. Obviously, you can't rely on word of mouth marketing because you can only grow so much by then. You've grown the business quite substantially since you started it. What else did you do that worked to get clients into you?
So not a lot, to be honest, because our biggest clients are strategic partners. So we don't necessarily have to do much selling. And this is what we're trying to work on now, is the strategic partners rather than the individual customers. They are starting to come our way more now through just from being present on Google. And we don't do Google ads. We did, but it didn't work for us at the time. But just keeping our website updated, the blogs, the social media activity, it just seems to be working now, because we're getting calls through. Obviously, that's a few years worth of work to get us to that point where we're actually bindable now. But before that, we The people that didn't come with me, I started getting in touch with, and it was the ones that are strategic partners. So, and we're fortunate enough that one that we got, someone that we dealt with left and went to another one and took us with them. We've had it with the hospitals now. Someone's left the hospital, took us to another one. So we just keep getting business through them at the moment. So I heard a great phrase yesterday that you only borrow a customer because they're not there for life, because we can only sell a fire alarm system once. We can maintain it, but it's the maintenance that, okay, gives you a regular income, but it's not enough to keep the company running. So we need the big installations. But you only do that once. So you've only borrowed the customer, and then you need to replace them. Whilst we're working with the strategic partners, we're working with their clients, and they're going out getting new customers, so we don't need to worry about that. But obviously now we need to start to get to that next level. We do need to start ramping up the marketing. I've always ducked away from LinkedIn. I've been happy with all the other social media channels, but LinkedIn's the one, because you get so many funny people on there, don't you, that just like to argue the toss all the time.
The LinkedIn police.
Yeah, and I've just stayed away from them. Because I can't be doing with the hassle and the battle. I see them on other people's posts, and I think that's why I stay away from LinkedIn. But that's wrong, because as a business, a B2C business, you know, we need to be on it. We've got the company page, which is managed by somebody else. Mm. But I'm now starting to use my own LinkedIn now. That's from last week, and that's from Christina's talk at our last meetup. We really started. I've redone my page, starting to push that out now and become more active.
Mm. I noticed that your LinkedIn banner looks really good.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, it is. LinkedIn is very much about getting in touch with the right people at the right businesses and being seen as an expert in your industry. And
that's
the perfect platform for that.
Mm.
So if you put the effort into it on a regular basis, you'll get rewards from it. Absolutely. Yeah. I love the comment you made as well there about how you have contacts at businesses who then leave and go to other businesses and take you with them. We get that a lot here. We get contacts at businesses, they leave, and quite often you'll think, oh no, that's terrible. We've lost our contact. We've lost our way into this business. But it's not a bad thing at all. It's a great thing. Mm. If you have contacts who move around different businesses all the time, you'll just pick up all of the clients because they'll take you with them. And it is a brilliant thing for businesses, which is why it's important to keep in touch with your contact and try. So when your contact invariably does leave and takes you with them, you've still got contacts in there as well. A lot of businesses in our industry, and I presume in yours as well, don't make the effort to do that.
Mm.
They don't realize that it's people you need to be in touch with. It's people you need to connect in with.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're just going to lose the clients as people move. But it's an advantage, not a disadvantage. So when you set up your initial business now, JKE, you said you had no confidence it was going to work.
Yep.
But you made it hugely successful, and you cited business coach and mentoring as an important aspect to that.
Yes.
What was the first step you made, and why did you do it?
What, in going down the mentorship and
Mentorship and the business coach. Yeah, what was the first thing you did? Because not a lot of businesses will accept they need a business coach. They'll think that I know how to do this myself. I can do everything. Why do I need someone else to come in and tell me about my business when they don't know my business? But you made that step, which is the great thing to do. Not everybody will do it. What made you want to do it?
So it was my first, and you're going to love this, it's my first BNI meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And
big shout out to the BNI, yes.
Yeah, it's my first BNI meeting. And there's a guy called Alan from Action Coach. And it was really welcoming. And, you know, he was introducing me to other people that he thought I could do business with, you know, electricians and things like that. And it was his 10-minute presentation that day. And the first slide that went up, I'll never forget it. And I've done this in my videos that I do. I've said it to him. The one thing that stuck was that in my head was that slide. And it was, momentum begins with movement. And I thought, because in order to keep going, you've got to start.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I was gripped by his presentation. And I thought, you know what? This guy could actually add value to my business. So afterwards I got in touch and we had the discovery interview and, you know, I had confidence in him. And, you know, I'm probably a bad student because, you know, he'll set me tasks to do, and whether I do them or not is a different matter. But there's those things that do stick with me that I do adopt. And, you know, the 90-day goal setting, you know, I make sure that, you know, we do that each quarter. The various strategies, you know, he always nags me about cash flow forecasts, which is like, I hate numbers. But he said it to me enough times that it's now sticking and I'm starting to do it. But it's sort of, I'm not accountable to anybody. And if you're not accountable to anybody, then, you know, do you do what you're supposed to do?
Yeah.
To keep that momentum. So, yeah, he holds me accountable. Every 2 weeks now we have a meeting. Every 2 weeks is digging, you know, just to see where I am, what needs to happen to get me to the next stage. You know, what's the targets for the next 2 weeks that we need to tick off? And like I say, I'm a bad student. I hardly tick off everything he gives me, but if I tick off one thing is better than zero. So, and it's worked for 4 years, four years, I think it is now.
Are you still working with Action Coach?
Still working with him, yeah. Yeah, it's probably five years now.
And did you go back to that BNI meeting?
Yeah, I signed up for 12 months.
Just the 12 months?
Just, I was a really bad BNI as well.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't, you know, I didn't get anything from the room, which obviously you're not there for the room, you're there for their contacts. And it took me until last year where I actually got a big installation of somebody that I met through BNI. And I actually, previous to that, the other biggest job that I'd had was when I went as a visitor. After I'd finished BNI, I went as a visitor a couple of years later to another BNI where I met another visitor in the room and then ended up getting the security installation for a tennis club.
Wow.
And visitor, you know, yeah. Just two visitors in a room. So I do see the power of the networking. And you just have to be there to give as well, don't you? And I wasn't very good at that side. Well, my argument was I'm working all over the country and, you know, I'm very rarely in my local area.
Mm.
So, and it's a lot of local businesses that I'm dealing with. So I never really had the opportunity to give.
Of course, you know, you don't have to give locally. You can give nationally and even internationally.
Yes, I know.
So yes. We've got an electrician in our group, for example, and he does he's a Cockney and he likes to say he does bank jobs. Because he decommissions the electric in banks. So he works all over the country doing that. So he needs subbies wherever he is. So he gives work out to other electricians all over the UK through BNI. So most of his referrals go across the whole country rather than locally. So that could have potentially worked for you if you're working all over the country needing people.
Absolutely.
So you could have give just to say, you know, you could
yeah.
you could have been a great powerful member and got loads of work from it, but there we are, you know. So when You mentioned mentors as well, and obviously you're in the inner circle, as it is now with me, with Progressive. What mentors have you worked with, and what successes have you had from them?
Well, it's just the, you know, who we've got, the Robs, the Marks, you know, Rob Moore, Mark Homer, yourself, Christina, Arj, you know, anyone who stands up on that stage and gives us insights into, Jesson James as well. We can't forget Jesson. You know, that's obviously the key person who we signed up for in the business school. So it's taking on their experience, their knowledge, their education. And it's not necessarily mentoring on one-to-one mentoring. It's that masterminding.
Mm.
So I take a lot from the masterminding rather than the one-to-one, because I was cherry pick and then just think, oh yeah, I can apply that into my business. You know, one of the biggest things was videos. It's okay me doing all these posts on social media, but you know, you need to show why you are the expert or the authority in your field. And it, once again, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable, I never saw myself as doing videos. You know, you put a camera in my, I remember my business coach, and I had to do a video testimonial for him, and I was okay with that. So I did the video testimonial. It was a Q&A session. And, but then he gave us 5 3-minute videos of our own that we could do. And I sat in front of this camera. I was like, hi, my name is... this is how it carried on for probably about 20 minutes. And I threw my toys out the pram and says, no, forget it. I'm not doing this. Just forget it. I can't do videos. I don't know what I'm going to say. You know, I've got these topics listed, but I thought the topics are rubbish. You know, why is anyone going to be interested? And this is another thing. Why is anyone going to listen to me? So then my business coach said, okay, Dan, look, you got to do this. It's going to be great for business. How about we change things around and we do a Q&A? I says, okay, let's try that. And so he did the Q&A and it worked really well. But fast forward, you put a camera in my face, I still just melt in front of it. Right, up until sort of last year. But then it's the mentorship groups, coming along to the mentorship groups, listening to other people doing the videos, how important video content is. And also, unless you're in these mentorship groups, you're never going to think about doing it, are you? You know, most people aren't going to think about, oh, I think video is going to be good. Let me do that. They're going to just stick to just doing the post and putting a picture up there.
Because it's easy to hide behind a screen.
It's easy, exactly. So, you know, in the business school, our homework was to go out and do a video. So I did it. And I need to look for that on my Google Photos where it saved all the thumbnails of the 25 attempts that I did just to say my name. But I did it. And yes, it's cringy. Yes, it's rubbish, you know, but we know that from being in mentorship groups, don't we? That your first time is going to be rubbish. Your second time, third time, it's always going to be rubbish until you start being consistent and get good at it. And that's what I did. And so Hodge Garley did in Christmas time, 2022, did the 12 Reels of Christmas. And He was helping us out, giving us context to put the videos into. And we did the 12 reels of Christmas. So every single day for 12 days, you do a new reel, which is different. And it's always different, a different format. And I continued it for another, I did about 22 days, I think it was.
Wow.
And that really gave me the confidence then. I was hiding behind TikTok. because it's easy to hide behind TikTok. So anyone watching and wants to start video, start on TikTok. It just gets you comfortable, gets you used to using CapCut and the features. And then last month I did, I said I was going to do 30 days, a video a day, 30 days. And this is for me wanting to, because I want to start helping other businesses.
Yeah.
I want to start helping startup to scale up businesses. So on one of my channels, I said, right, I'm going to do 30 days, 30 videos, and it's going to be related to things that I've learned from podcasts, from books, from mentoring. So I just took like one of the, something like Grant Cardone book and the four levels of action, for example, I did it on. I had to explain the four levels of action. Then the next day I did one of the seven habits of highly effective people. And then the next day, something else and something else and something else. And I did it for 30 days. And you start thinking it's cringy. You nodded your head when I said it before, but why would people go to listen to you?
Yep.
And then, but then the more you do this self-development, you start hearing different things. It puts it into perspective. And there is always someone that will want to listen to you, to your journey, to your experience, because there's always someone that wants to be in your position or someone that wants to be where you are today.
Yeah.
Because once upon a time, I was that person wanting to be where I am today. I'm here now wanting to be where somebody else is. And that's why we listen to them. So, it's just the whole imposter syndrome, isn't it? You think, why is anyone going to listen to me? What gives me the right or the authority to start telling people? But 7 years in business, you've got the experience.
You have, and that's absolutely right. Anybody that thinks of starting a podcast or thinks of doing videos for their business is like, why is anyone going to listen to me? What do I know? Yet you know your business better than anyone. You know your industry better than anybody else outside of your industry. There's not a single person outside your industry that knows your industry as well as you do. And you have knowledge and experience and expertise that they do not have.
Yeah.
And we sometimes forget that. We think, there's people in my industry that are so much further along than me. Of course there are. There's people in every industry that are so much further along. But your contacts are going to listen to you because you are the expert. To them, you know way more than they do. And we all have that. Doesn't matter what our industry is, we all have that. And we need to realize that we have value. We have something to share. No matter how far you are on your journey, you have value and something to share to others to help other people to get to where you are. But
we're obligated to share that as well. We have an obligation to share that.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, we're just being selfish bastards. And as you said, you want to mentor other people now. You want to help other people to get them to where they need to be. And that's brilliant, because there's very few that will even think of doing that. But again, they'll have the imposter syndrome. How could I possibly mentor someone else? What do I know? Yet you've got to where you are by making a lot of mistakes, by spending a lot of money, by doing a lot of learning, which a lot of people will refuse to do. And you can help them. You can help them.
Absolutely.
Now you mentioned you're also considering, or are you actually starting another business as well? Is that right?
Yes.
Because one business isn't enough, so let's have another one.
That's it. It's JK Security B2B. I think I said B2B B2C earlier. And
I think B2B. You did. Yeah. So business to business.
Business to business. So we're business to business, but every so often we get residential people ring us up and, either A, we just can't resource it, or B, we're too expensive because the equipment that we use is a higher level equipment. Mm. And the thought of using anything less than that goes against my values. However, we then lose jobs because we're too expensive. So I thought, right, okay, I need to separate this now. There needs to be a line in the sand. There's B2B, there's B2C. This is the approved kit list for B2C. This is what we carry on doing for B2B. And I did a bit of research on what other companies are installing. So I found what they're doing, what they're offering, how much they're charging. I thought, well, okay, it's working. There's one business who's doing really, really well. The suppliers can't keep up with the demand. And all they're doing is Facebook advertising. Oh. And they're getting so many installations per week just on B2C. So I thought, right, let's do it. So over Christmas, I set up the new business. The idea is I want to scale it from a 0 to 6-figure business in 12 months because I'm documenting the journey as I go, and I'm going to be turning that into a course.
Wow.
Because once again, it's something from being in the mentorship groups and hearing how what's in your head could provide you a nice way of living. I thought, well, what do I know? Fire and security systems. How am I going to make, how can I turn that into a course? Because, you know, I don't see how you can. I thought, what can I do a course on? And I thought, business. Yeah, I've created a business. I've set up a business. Then I thought, well, why are people going to listen to me? You know, I need experience because I forget that I've actually got a multiple 6-figure business. You know, we're approaching that 7-figure business mark. That's going to be accomplished, if not this year, next year. You know, so surely that's a testament. But because the start of the business, and I didn't really have to, I missed a chunk of the business out. So now I'm putting that chunk into this new business, starting it from scratch, doing all your marketing, trying to create an email database to go out to. You know, we've got the software for all the automation to keep doing the mail shots to them. It's a bit slow going at the moment. Once again, you know, I thought, I'll start on January the 1st and January the 2nd, there'll be a queue of people waiting to sign up. we've got our first few clients now on it. I've not been pushing it too hard. We did at the start, but I've not been pushing it too hard. But as from April, we're going to go and start pushing it big. And I'd like it to be a 6-figure business by Christmas.
And then the course is going to be how to start a 6-figure business in under 12 months.
Yep.
That's going to have interest.
If I'm walking the walk, it's all about, once again, it's that, we'll go back to what you said earlier about the confidence. Hmm. Am I confident in doing it? Am I confident in being able to deliver a course on how to do it? Oh, no. But why? Because I've done it. No. I've already done it. Hmm. So I'm doing it again. So we'll do it again, walk through the process. So if anyone can walk in the walk as we're doing this. And it keeps me accountable.
Wow. So. That's awesome. That's awesome. And I think that's a great way to end on as well, because we're just about out of time as well. So thank you very much for doing this. It's been some fascinating stuff you've been coming out with. If anyone's listening to this and thinking, I want to know more about that elephant, or I want to know more about JKE, or about how to start a 6-figure business in under 12 months, what's the best way for someone to get in touch with you?
I'm all over social media. So Dan Mather, just look for my face. It's all over the place. So my website, jkesecurity.co.uk. There's a contact form on there. And I'll just email.
Thank you very much. I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
Nice one.
I've loved it. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Cheers.